That's a great question.
Here I am as Miss Kentucky, competed in Miss America, and it's been really an amazing journey.
So in Lexington in particular, we mostly resettle Congolese, and we have the largest population of Congolese within Kentucky.
And he said to me, science is cool, learning is fun. That's what we do.
All the schools in Kentucky present a power word presentation, which talks about verbal bullying, negative perceptions in hip-hop, how to challenge our peers when they use negative words. At the end of the day, words do matter, and it's a catalyst for action.
That's a great question. That's a powerful question. That's a question that I hope that all of us will continue to ponder on.
We'll be getting back out to playing live, but some places that I do like playing here in Lexington.
I tend to focus on local issues, local people, you know, local being Kentucky.
So we've got these various battles raging between the Attorney General and the governor, and in the background is the former governor.
This is a myth that is really common.
Mountain Dew is not a contraceptive.
Probably is going to cause a pretty bad yeast infection.
An extreme yeast infection.
If you can't deep fry it, spray paint in gold.
Now, will the animal send you like a postcard as a thank you with a little paw print on it?
Who's at fault more, men or women?
The vetting process. Did you already ask that? Okay.
It works. Grand piano.
If it's Friday, starring Ice Cube and Chris Tucker as two unemployed but streetwise men whose hijinks include drug dealing, illegal possession of firearms, and other good-natured tomfoolery, then it's Bluegrass Bios on WLXU LPFM Lexington Community Radio.
That sounds like my autobiography.
It really does.
Yeah. Just replace Ice Cube and Chris Tucker with me and my dad.
You can tweet the show at Bluegrass Bios. Follow us on Twitter at Bluegrass Bios. Bang your head violently against the keyboard at Bluegrass Bios. Or voice your support for racial inequality at Real Donald Trump.
There you go.
Benjaneer Wolf will be operating the board per usual.
Hey, Kyle.
I'll be asking our guests the hard-hitting questions like, where are you from? And would you mind speaking into the microphone?
And a little louder.
A little louder now.
A little quieter.
Our guest, incidentally, is Lexington Clinic pediatrician Dr. Agata Taborik. We will be discussing with her the national pandemic known as, let me see if I can pronounce this correctly, children.
Yes.
And what you can do to keep yours healthy.
Hmm.
Chuck C. will simulate zoo noises for an hour.
Oh, good.
But first.
He's good at that.
You got anything?
No. Not apart from the usual kind of things we complain about on a weekly basis.
Okay, so to that end, It never stops. Now, we've been wanting to, or I think we've discussed this at length, to make this opening segment somewhat timely, newsworthy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gotten to the extent where last week you've had to put at the beginning of the show a disclaimer for
we both do it.
Our political opinions.
They're similar.
I would like to deviate from that
to
more of a... Now, this will be somewhat in that field, but a little bit tangential. Ultimately, I'd like to discuss more fun type news items.
Fair enough.
But not including the fact that a woman in India had an adult cockroach crawling to her nose while she was sleeping resided there for 12 hours before it was surgically removed.
Oh, wow.
Now, not that story, but along those lines, something that's sort of a news periphery, not headlines. Because
sure.
I was looking at the headlines before I came over here, man, and this is, as we speak, you know, this is Wednesday evening to pull back the veil a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's 6 out of 12 has the word Trump in it, and it's whatever it is. Like he's blaming the Democrats for blocking his ability to fill his cabinet. He's tweeting outrage that Nordstrom's has dumped his daughter's line of fragrances or whatever it is, and it's gotten to the point where I am not.
They've silenced my girl, Liz.
Your girl, Liz.
Yeah, Elizabeth Warren. They said no, you can't talk anymore.
Okay, tell us about that.
Oh, well, when she was giving a counter-argument to Jeff Sessions' appointment for Attorney General, Mitch McConnell invoked, I think, some obscure law of Congress and said, you have to be quiet now, some rule of the Senate. And they shut her down and took her off, took her out from behind the podium. And I imagine had her drawn and quartered.
So, yeah, that's got bad visuals to it. And ultimately, this stuff is making me depressed. So,
yeah.
To that end, I found an article before I came over here from the Harvard Business Review, and it's entitled "How to Respond to an Offensive Comment at Work." And I'll just kind of outline what they were saying. We can discuss really this in real world terms, because as we know, anyone who has gone to or writes for Harvard Business Review has no concept of reality.
Little cut off.
But we all understand if you've been in an office environment that there are
different... I've run into this so many times.
Okay.
You hear something, maybe it's directed at you, maybe it's a comment that you hear two people talking in the break room, outside, wherever. Now, I take it that this article does not recommend getting up in their face and pointing your finger at them or throwing food or...
Well, there's an escalation, and you're right. You're on the right track. The first step is to ask yourself whether it's worth speaking up at all.
Oh, good, because that's the first thing I always ask myself whenever I run into that.
Now, you run into there an internal conflict, as is pointed out in the article. Is silence equal to consent, which is a real... is a real possibility, right? If you allow somebody to say something that's perhaps racially motivated, is your not standing up? It's sort of like
you have to kind of weigh the weight of what the other person said. Is it just kind of a thing that gets under your skin or gets on your nerves, or is it something overtly discriminatory or racist or misogynist? I can tell you what I've done, and I want to know if this article agrees with me or not, that printed word, is sometimes I will say, like, George said something. I will say, George, I heard what you said. I disagree with you. If you want to talk about it sometime, I'd like to share my opinion of what you just said with you. And we amicably walk away. 9 times out of 10, George will not come up and talk, want to debate me on this particular issue afterwards, but sometimes we do, and we'll have a nice conversation.
Yeah, and I think ultimately, because this is, you know, the unreal part of this that exists only in a think tank is really the correlation that I would make between somebody who would make some sort of, and let's just keep it in the realm of racism and homophobia or
because
whatever.
It's obvious, it's a no-brainer kind of a thing.
They're probably already not going to be the type that wants to sit down for a latte and have an in-depth discussion about their cultural viewpoints, right? Like, there is an ignorance that's attached to that kind of discussion already. So,
well, I've noticed that if somebody is that homophobic or that racist or that sexist, they keep their voices down and they don't say things at work. I've yet to run into a situation at work, and I could be in the minority here, where somebody has said something beyond the pale, where I stop, pivot, and turn and say, what makes you think you can talk about people like that?
Okay, very good. So you've decided that this is a person and a comment that's within the realm of reason.
Okay, good. Yeah.
And your first step, as you decided to not keep quiet, you approach with compassion, right?
Yes, absolutely.
As you and I and everyone under the sun has said and spoken out of ignorance.
Oh, sure.
To one time or another.
I have plenty, and I've had some great people in my life who have set me straight. And it's, especially the women in my family. Mom, aunt, grandmother, cousin, if I say something stupid,
sure,
they shut me down and explain to me why it was stupid, what I just said, and I am a better person for it.
Now, this is sort of where they start losing me, Harvard Business Review, is
oh my.
step four, explain your reaction, which I feel like at this point, it must be so uncomfortable at that water cooler or wherever you're congregating. Mm-hmm. The recommendation is, I'm confused by the statement that you made. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you something. Please explain to me mm-hmm. what you were thinking by saying. And again, like, there is... That sounds like a common, reasonable way to approach it that ultimately sounds like it's going to lead nowhere. Is that
just
not your...
Being that polite?
Yes.
That it won't lead anywhere?
I don't think so.
I know not doing... Well, you said earlier maybe silence is perceived as consent. You know that saying nothing will do nothing.
Right.
So the odds of doing something as carefully as you can with some effort and some kindness has a chance of working. As opposed to doing nothing, which has no chance of working.
Well, how long is your break at this point?
I can talk very fast if I'm so motivated.
With you have points to.
Oh yeah, I've run into this situation more than a few times.
Well, there
I have speeches prepared. I have monologues.
I'm sure that
I should write a book.
So you would be a fan of step six: share information
perhaps, as much as I can.
Perhaps a flyer. And then, I'm a big fan of a seven, change the subject. So our guest coming up is Dr. Agata Taborik. She's a pediatrician for Lexington Clinic at Eagle Creek Medical Plaza. We'll be right back. This is Bluegrass Bios on Lexington Community Radio.
Supermercado Aguascalientes grocery stores offer domestic and imported quality products with an ample selection of fresh produce and meats. Aguascalientes offers international money transfer services as well as domestic and international phone services. Supermercado Aguascalientes No. 2 is located at 459 New Circle Road in Lexington, Kentucky. Supermercado Aguascalientes No. 5 is located at 2220 Nicholasville Road in Lexington. For more information, you can call 859-275-2121. Lexington Community Radio thanks Supermercado Aguascalientes for supporting True Community Radio.
Por su historia y su leyenda y sus viejas tradiciones de la noble tierra azteca, corazón de corazón.
Hi, this is Terry Crews, actor, former football player, and father of five. I'm also an expert on drama. There's the good kind that comes with having a house full of kids, and there's silly drama like the drama around my percolating pectorals. And then there's the drama you can skip.
Skip the drama that comes with not having your high school diploma or equivalency. Find free adult education classes near you and finish your diploma. Visit finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org.
And lead the drama to actors like me.
Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ed Council.
Tune in to Urban Conversations.
Every Monday and Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. on 93.9 WLXU.
Come sit in the lounge with us. I'm your host, Jammin.
And I'm your host, Future, where your voice matters.
Any questions?
We're back on Bluegrass Bios. We're joined in studio by Dr. Agata Taborik. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
Okay, fantastic. The practice helped. She's a pediatrician at Lexington Clinic at Eagle Creek Medical Plaza. So thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Now, how long have you been practicing medicine?
So I would say 4.5 years.
Okay, and you studied at Louisville. That's where you got your MD.
Mm-hmm.
And then did your residency at Wash U.
Correct.
All right, I'm from St. Louis. What did you think about my hometown?
I really liked living there.
Yeah?
It was a good time.
So how were you drawn to pediatrics?
Well, in med school, you get to see every specialty, and just working with kids is really unique and special and fun. So for those reasons.
Okay, so let's just jump right into it because, as I said, I'm not a parent, Ben.
Not
that he's aware of.
Not that I know.
And I have a lot of questions about the healthcare. So let's just start from the birth. What are some of the chief concerns parents should have when caring for a newborn?
Well, I talk to new parents on a daily basis, and it's a very stressful and confusing time because babies do funny things. They breathe funny. They poop funny. They cry a lot. So, I mean, there's a lot of different concerns that come up. I guess specifically, you know, we talk about feeding and just basics, really.
Are any concerned about breastfeeding versus bottle and have questions
definitely.
Like that?
Is that within your realm? I mean, you can kind of cover a lot of different areas as a pediatrician, like, because that'd be sort of an, would that be within obstetrician's sort of realm, the feeding?
Yeah, what's the line? What's the line?
Oh, definitely, it's definitely within pediatrics, because we want to make sure that the baby is growing and developing. So if breastfeeding isn't going well, you know, then that's a problem for the baby because they're not gaining weight like they need to. So definitely, with all new parents, we talk about feeding and breastfeeding a lot.
Do you find that, I mean, I'm sure this is the case, but most new parents are ill-equipped as far as a skill set to raise a human child from its
inception, right? You're talking to two of them right now.
Right.
Well, no, I think actually most new parents, they have, you know, the full 10 months to kind of prepare and read up on it. So I feel like most parents do have a good idea of how to do most things.
Do you find that they've Googled quite a bit and bought the baby books?
For better or worse, yes.
Well, what are some of the baby books you would recommend to an expecting parent?
I usually actually recommend a website over a book. Mm. It's called healthychildren.org, and it's free because it's a website, which is great. And it's published by the American Academy of Pediatrics, so it's all based on science and studies, and doctors write all the articles on there, so you get good advice from that website rather than a lot of different websites where you can, you know, get different opinions from people who may not be qualified to give them. So I actually recommend that, again, because it's free, it's available easily online.
Now, do parents still have the Dr. Spock book? Is that still in circulation?
I don't think so, no.
Oh, no, because that was every parent of a child in the 70s, and I was born in the 70s, had the Benjamin Spock book. Are you familiar, Kyle?
I am not.
Oh, well, so that may have just been my age group, the Nixon, Ford, and Carter babies there. Yeah, it was the Bible. It was the Bible for new parents before there was an internet and .orgs and places like that you could go to. Do they have a good forum where people can ask questions and get a response from a medical doctor?
Actually, I don't really think they have a forum on there, but they have tons and tons of articles. And obviously, if any new parents have questions, their pediatrician is the best person to ask those questions to.
Gotcha.
How many months old should a child be before they're required to work?
No comment.
Well, for an allowance.
For an allowance? Oh, I don't know. That's a personal choice. Yeah.
60 months.
60 months.
Maybe 70.
Did you ever get an allowance, Agata?
I sure did.
Yeah?
$1 a week.
Yeah, what kind of chores did you have to do?
Oh, you know, I don't even remember. Just random
garbage.
Dusting was, I feel like I dusted a lot. I don't know.
We're talking to Dr. Agata Taborik. We are not treating her as though she's an MD, but she's in studio with us. She's a pediatrician at the Lexington Clinic at Eagle Creek Medical Plaza. So to switch gears a little bit, I want to talk about some of the risks that newborns face for, you know, within the first year. And one of the words that you have to pinch some salt and throw it over your shoulder is an acronym, and it's SIDS.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know much about this. In fact, I was trying to learn more today. Could you explain to our audience what this horrible syndrome is?
Yep. So SIDS stands for Sudden Infant Death Syndrome. And there's a variety of causes that can cause kids to have SIDS, but one of the primary things that can cause it is the baby not sleeping in an appropriate place. So it's really important for newborns to always sleep in their own crib or bassinet. They should never be sleeping with their parents in the same bed, because if a parent is asleep and rolls over or tosses the cover or whatever, obviously you can imagine that can be dangerous for a newborn. So that's a primary thing, that you can have your baby right next to you, but in a bassinet, so they're still at arm's length, but in a safe place.
Why would they want their infant in bed with them? Is that for a security type measure? Is that to
rejoice?
Sure. Yeah.
Just celebrate the newborn, and then you all just kind of drift off together?
Correct, yeah. I mean, obviously, when you have a newborn, you're up every couple hours feeding them. You're exhausted. So it's really easy to drift off to sleep, even if you have the best intentions of the baby sleeping on their own. So that's why I think always having that bassinet right next to you. So if you feel like your eyes are closing or you're drifting off, just put the baby right in there.
You know, that would be an accidental form, right? But is there, what I had read, and correct me if the internet has failed me, is that the suddenness often is, the cause is not traceable.
That's correct.
Explain how we have this exquisite medical field, and yet we don't know the cause for our infants losing their lives so early.
Well, part of the things that can happen can be, for example, undiagnosed heart problems, some kind of infection that's not diagnosed, and so forth. I mean, that definitely can happen. Now, there are certain things to do that are based on studies that show that doing certain things can decrease sudden infant death syndrome. So I already talked about, you know, the baby always sleeping on their own. The other key is that you should only have a fitted sheet in the bassinet or crib with the baby. So you don't want to have stuffed animals or pillows or blankets or anything else in there, okay, again, for the risk of suffocation. Actually, smoking or cigarette smoke being around a baby is associated with an increased risk of SIDS. So if anybody is a smoker, they should smoke outside, change their shirt before they are around the baby.
Oh, so even like the odor or the smell can, mm-hmm, can react badly to, mm-hmm, them.
So this is not a mystical syndrome. This is really based off of environmental factors when you have an incredibly fragile life in your hands.
Well, I think it's both. Talking about co-sleeping or baby sleeping in the bed with parents, that's a definite cause of it. But there are other causes, like I mentioned, undiagnosed medical problems that can cause the baby to suddenly die. So the causes of it are diverse.
Now, so what, when we're talking about more practical safety concerns, obviously you're talking about codependent sleeping, or how did you put it?
Co-sleeping,
very well. Brevity.
It's a Freudian slip.
thank you, man. Sure. But outside of that, traveling with an infant, with a newborn, like what are some of the recommendations that you take there? Let's just even say going to the store.
Well, definitely with newborns, we want to keep them out of large crowds. And as you can imagine, if you're in Kroger and people see a newborn, they're going to be, mm-hmm, trying to touch the newborn and put their face in the newborn's face and so forth. So obviously with that, the baby can catch colds and so forth. So I generally recommend to keep the baby out of large crowds as much as possible. And if you do go out, have one of those covers over the car seat so that people can't get too close.
We're with Dr. Agata Taborik, pediatrician for Lexington Clinic. Now, as the child grows, its immune system improves and matures. They reach toddlerhood. What sort of health focuses should parents have?
Well, in toddlerhood, we really focus a lot on how the baby is developing, meaning not only their verbal skills, are they saying as many words as they need to, are they starting to form sentences with their words. We also focus on fine motor things, meaning using a fork or spoon, picking up a pencil and holding it correctly and so forth. So, and also make sure they're growing in terms of their height and weight. So those are concerns we always bring up at every well-child check, is whether the baby is growing appropriately and developing appropriately.
So would you look at report cards, stuff of that nature? Like, how are you assessing the development there?
Asking, for example, how many words does your child say, and making sure that's appropriate for their age.
What is appropriate for, let's say, a two-year-old?
So a two-year-old should be saying at least 50 words and starting to combine two to three words together into small sentences.
Okay.
Would you recommend maybe keeping a diary to kind of keep track of all that stuff, height and weight, and maybe even doctor's visits and appointments?
Yeah, at least at our clinic, we always give a printout to the parents of the child's current height and weight, so they can definitely keep that, just keep track of it.
There was an article released today by Valerie Honeycutt of the Lexington Herald Leader reporting multiple cases of whooping cough at Clay's Mill Elementary. Can you explain the effects of this illness on school-age kids and what symptoms to look out for?
Yes, definitely. I'm glad you brought that up because that's been a big concern for pediatricians in town. So whooping cough is also known as pertussis, and it causes a very severe cough that lasts for a long time. Typically, kids with whooping cough have coughing fits that are hard to control, meaning they don't just cough once or twice. They cough and cough and cough and cough and can't stop coughing, to the point that a lot of times they vomit from the coughing, or the term whooping cough comes from them after they finally are able to catch their breath. They make this whooping sound to take a big, deep breath in. You know, with most colds, 7 to 10 days and your cough should be better. This can linger for weeks.
So there's no thinking of, I wonder if there's something wrong with my child. You may not know it's whooping cough, but you're definitely going to know there's something wrong with that kind of coughing fit and vomiting and all that.
Correct. I mean, it's possible to have a really mild case of it. And in that case, it might be impossible to tell it apart from a regular cold. But in most cases, it's a severe cough, so you will know that something's up.
Is this highly communicable?
It sure is.
If you start to see your child in Lexington having coughing that's uncontrollable, pull them out of school?
Yeah, immediately pull them out of school and then take them to their pediatrician. There is a test for whooping cough. It's a nasal swab. It does take, I would say, on average about 5 days to get the result back, so it's not a test we get back right away. But whenever we suspect whooping cough, we actually put kids on antibiotics, azithromycin, also known as a Z-Pak, and that makes them not contagious, even if they continue coughing. And they need to finish all 5 days of the antibiotic before going back to school. And that's about the time we would get their testing back to confirm one way or the other.
Dr. Agata Taborik, pediatrician at Lexington Clinic at Eagle Creek Medical Plaza. What are some of the other communicable diseases that young people are especially susceptible to?
Well, we've been seeing a ton of flu cases. I would say probably every other patient that I've seen recently has had the flu. So lots of people have the flu in Lexington in the past couple of weeks. With both of these, you know, there are vaccines to help prevent both of them, obviously the flu shot.
So you could, at what age would you recommend a flu shot for a child? Because maybe infants are probably a little too young for that.
Well, the earliest a baby can get a flu shot is at 6 months.
Oh, okay.
So it's actually pretty early.
Yeah.
To help protect those babies that can't get a flu shot because they're too young, definitely parents and close contacts, grandparents and so forth, should all get vaccinated.
Let's talk about vaccinations. As a woman of science, and this really has only been in the last few years, this backlash against vaccinations and the accusations that they would be, that they're detrimental to development. Can you speak to that?
Definitely. So there's been tons of studies that have shown that there's no correlation between vaccines and autism. The doctor who put out that initial study that started all this concern lost his ability to practice medicine and falsified the studies that he did. But unfortunately, this has continued to be a concern for parents. And I think a lot of it is what I mentioned before about being careful what kind of websites you go to and where you get your advice, because there's some bad information out there. So
it seems like it's like a almost like a superstition native type of fear that's crept over the adults that have made these decisions, like a mistrust of medicine in general, right? It's so microscopic.
I think a lot of it stems from nobody really knows what causes autism. And you have a lot of parents of autistic children who are looking for something.
Scapegoats.
And if you know what causes autism, then maybe you can find a solution for it.
Sure.
And so, yeah, it's a lot of frustration. It's a mistrust of pharmaceutical companies,
but ultimately,
and their reputations.
Dr. Tabork, we have your endorsement of vaccinations for infants.
Yes, and full endorsement.
Right, there we go.
There we go. Let's we'll cut that up. We'll keep that one.
Yeah, yeah. That'll go in the intro.
Dr. Agata Tabork with us now. Here, do you treat all minors like all like? Is it a legal line there, like under 18 and under, or under 18, I guess, or is there like a physiological cutoff to when somebody should start seeing a general physician versus a pediatrician?
Well, at our office, we actually see people through college age. So we see people in their early 20s, but each pediatrician's office has their own kind of cutoff. A lot of them have 18, but if we make a good relationship with a teenager, they're no different when they're 17 versus 19. So we like to continue to see them through their early 20s.
So as a pediatrician, you would have the same skill set as a general physician, but they would not necessarily have that additional expertise of really young type kids.
No, I wouldn't say that, because a general practitioner would be better at treating conditions that older people have, like high blood pressure and diabetes and high cholesterol and so forth, which we do see some in teenagers and young adults, but definitely they would be more knowledgeable on topics like that, because that's what they see on a daily basis.
I see. So you would primarily, as long as the development is going, you'll treat or see young adults as well as a pediatrician.
Now, we had Farmer Brown, the MC, on our last show.
Did we ever?
Oh, he was great. And do you talk to parents about diet and fast food and eating healthy and stuff like that?
Oh, definitely. Sometimes it's kind of you have to be a little bit tactful about how you bring it up, especially, for example, if you have a 12-year-old girl sitting in front of you, you don't want to be saying a lot of negative things that she can kind of internalize and pick up on. So I always try to keep it more positive and talk about healthy choices without necessarily saying words like obesity and whatnot. So definitely that's something we talk about on a daily basis with patients.
You're dealing with children, and if Bill Cosby has taught us only one thing, and he has, it's that children can be hilarious.
Yeah, and darnful.
He is exactly.
Yes.
They are darnful. And he has literally taught us nothing else. So what can you tell us your funniest story as a pediatrician treating kids?
It's always pretty hilarious when children stick things into their ears and nose, which actually happens quite a bit. And it's usually toddlers who do it. They put in beans or beads or whatnot. But I had a good story when I was in residency in St. Louis, actually. We had a child who, I think he was about 8 years old, and he was doing a magic trick that went horribly wrong.
Oh, no.
And the penny that he was trying to hide went too far up his nose.
Oh, God.
So luckily, we successfully fished it out, but he was going to keep that penny in a special place for memories after that.
a lot of exploratory missions for various objects.
Exactly.
we're in studio with Dr. Agata Tabork, pediatrician at the Lexington Clinic. So tell us more about the work Lexington Clinic is doing.
So Lexington Clinic is a huge organization that has doctors in all different types of specialties. And the kind of motto of Lexington Clinic is that we take care of patients from the time they're born all the way through their life. And then I obviously work for the pediatrics department within Lexington Clinic. We have 6 doctors, and we have 3 different locations of our practice. So I work at Eagle Creek, like you mentioned. There's a location in Beaumont Circle in Lexington, and then we have a 3rd office in Richmond, Kentucky.
How does a clinic, just defining terms here, compared to a hospital?
Well, Lexington Clinic does all primarily outpatient care, meaning you go for appointments to see your doctor. It's not a place where you would stay, for example, overnight, like a hospital would be.
Okay, so this is sort of your who you would see regularly. That's where you guys would be.
Correct. And Lexington Clinic has both primary care, like pediatrics, for example, but they have all sorts of different specialists, surgeons, and so forth.
As a pediatrician, what should parents be looking for when selecting someone to look after their child's health care?
So I always recommend for new parents to do some research into which pediatrician they want to choose. Actually, a lot of parents come to the hospital delivering a baby and they have no idea. And you do have to decide on a pediatrician by the time you leave the hospital. So,
by law?
I don't know if it's a law, but it's required for you to have a follow-up appointment for the baby before you leave the hospital. So it's good to have that decision made before you're actually there, so you have time to think about it. We at Lexington Clinic offer prenatal visits, which are completely free for the parents, but what you can do is call and say you're interested in meeting with one of the doctors and make sure you like them, ask any questions that you have. So it's kind of like the parents' opportunity to interview their doctor and make sure it's somebody that they like. So it's a really nice service that we provide for expecting parents. So I would definitely encourage people to do that. Another thing to be aware of is insurance. So different doctor's offices take different types of insurance. So you want to make sure the office you have in mind actually takes the insurance that your baby is going to have. Like, for example, at Lexington Clinic, we take most private insurance, but we only take one type of Medicaid. If you know that your baby's going to be on Medicaid insurance, you want to choose the right type. So those are important things to kind of think about.
And where can people go online to find more information about Lexington Clinic and where they can find you and your pediatric staff?
So our website is lexingtonclinic.com, and under there you can find all the different specialties, and you would click on pediatrics, and then you would have all of our information, contact information, pictures, and so forth.
Can you make an appointment online?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, don't. Then make a phone call, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Agata Taborek, pediatrician at Lexington.
That's not when you type on the phone,
we'll
right?
We'll talk about that later. Oh, Lexington Clinic at Eagle Creek Medical Plaza. Thank you very much for coming in and talking to us today, doctor.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right, we'll be right back on Bluegrass Bios. He's Ben, and I'm Kyle.
This is Lydia Jacobs, host of Aging Adventures. We keep everyone up to date on what's going on in the senior community in Lexington, conferences available, how to stay healthy. We talk to a wide range of people, professionals, individuals who are paving their own way in the aging world. Aging Adventures with host Lydia Jacobs on Fridays, 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock on 93.9 WLXU, a Lexington community radio. But
in passing, we'll grow older every day. Welcome back to Bluegrass Bios on WLXU LPFM, Lexington Community Radio. I'm Kyle. He's Ben.
Hey, Kyle.
All right. So to close off the first hour of the show today on this February the 10th, just a mere 4 days between perhaps either the most joyous or most depressing holiday on your calendar. Ben, what do you think about the old Valentine's Day?
I hate it, Kyle.
Explain that.
I absolutely hate it. No.
Do you have a worst rejection on Valentine's Day? Because I have several candidates.
No. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is it does mark the end of seasonal affective disorder for me.
Yeah.
So that's January 2nd to Valentine's Day. Once February 15th rolls around, SAD's over. I move on with my life. It's usually
that's almost
cold.
Too coincidental.
It's usually colder and a little bit more depressing. So I'm not maybe as depressed as
you might
want to
expand that range of dates then.
No, I'm going to keep it. I'm going to keep it at the holiday. No, I don't like all the cards. If I'm not seeing anybody, then it's really, really depressing. If I am seeing someone, then it's a lot of pressure.
It's obligatory and expensive.
If you're clever, it doesn't have to be expensive, but you have to be exceedingly clever. So you're talking about learning a recipe and cooking a complicated meal.
Is that clever? And dessert.
I think so. It depends on the recipe.
Now, the weird thing, and maybe this isn't weird, but this holiday has obviously been full-on appropriated by...
Oh, it was started.
By
it
the
was...
fairer sex.
No, I thought you were going to talk about the Hallmark. Hallmark created it.
Yeah,
they?
But there's no such... There is zero marketing for women to
to do nice to do stuff for us.
Yeah, none of it. Now there is I'm with you on the learning to make something for a few reasons. First of all, eating out at a restaurant for Valentine's Day, total sucker bet. Because first of all, the menu is fixed. Yeah. If you have a later reservation, you're going to be stuck with something you don't want. Mm-hmm. You're going to be surrounded by people because they're cramming as many tables as they can into a place. I'm looking at you, Malones. and the service will suffer for it. Plus, it lacks creativity. I know you're saying clever.
Well, it lacks intimacy, now that I think about it, if it's phrased. Yeah, which if you go to a busy place.
Kind of the whole point, right?
If you go out, go to like the little place, the hole in the wall that nobody knows about that has great food, where you know you have the place to yourself and maybe get a little candle,
like a Chinese joint.
It could be. It could really be anything, as long as it's good and a little classy.
I'm thinking about spaghetti and meatballs, back alley. You guys get the same noodle, faces pulled together.
Yeah, if the Italian restaurants are smart, they'll have the single plate spaghetti that's just one long spaghetti.
Right.
And you both just start at one end.
Brought out back by the chef. Yeah.
Yes. Don't move the meatball with your nose. Right. That's dogs can do that because they're dogs. People, no, don't move things with your nose.
Do you have a Valentine's Day rejection story?
Actually, no, I don't. No, no. The breakup season is between the holidays and Valentine's Day. So that's when people get broken up. That's breaking up season.
Yeah, that has to be somehow related to the cold weather, and you're just forced to be indoors with each other all the time, right? Just get sick of each other.
A little bit. I think that a lot of the cases, it's one of the two parties knows the relationship is over and they don't want to have to deal with it over the holidays. They have a holiday obligation and then they want to do it before Valentine's Day to spare that sort of embarrassment or humiliation. Do you have a Valentine's Day?
I have multiple.
Has somebody broken up with you on Valentine's
Last
Day?
Year.
Really?
Yes.
On Valentine's Day.
Somebody I was pretty much living with.
Wow.
That was a bad day. But So
that's not classy. Can you share any of the specifics?
No, I can't. But I guess I'm just going to say it's the one that most stands out to me that's less fresh in my heart, Ben.
Yes.
But I'm always I'm the fool. You know, like I remember when I was in 10th grade, or even when I was a freshman in high school, buying a 12 pack of roses.
Oh, and, okay. I thought you were going to say some 12
the
pack
night,
of something
The night
else.
Before, I, you probably don't call them a 12 pack, but buying them the night before with like this preparation to, I was going to ask this girl, Tanya, that's her real name, to walk with me from math class before the class started to go to my locker to get my book with me, which of course was, it would have been fine if she wanted to do that, but she just thought it was really strange.
Now, did you have the flowers in your locker?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. Presenting them to her is like, you know, I didn't do the thing, do you want to be my Valentine, but it was like, here. And then I got made fun of for the rest of the day.
Oh,
geez. I ultimately have a horrific Valentine's Day record, but that's why I always go for it every year. I'm like Tom Brady.
I don't have, it's
the
not
Tom
horrific.
Brady of Valentine's Day.
It's not
Can we
horrific.
Cut that?
No. On Valentine's Day, I was living in Chicago and I had to stop by the grocery store and I heard a woman talking on her cell phone and she said, yeah, I'm just walking past the flower displays at the grocery store, and nobody's here to give me flowers on Valentine's Day. So I overheard that. I bought her a rose. I gave it to her, and she was just unbelievably embarrassed. Her face flushed bright red and couldn't say, and I kind of left her alone in her embarrassment. I was going to ask for her phone number. But she was just so embarrassed by it.
Yeah.
I don't think I did it. I think she appreciated
it. I think that
applies. Didn't do anything wrong. And it's a nice thing.
It is. And look, hey, Tanya, you'd be happy somebody gave you flowers.
Yeah, for real.
Ungrateful.
Yeah.
All right, we got anything else to talk about?
No, let's see. Valentine's Day sucks. Sudden infant death syndrome. No, I think we've covered everything.
Those are the only two things. All right, I'm Kyle. He's Ben. That's the end of the first hour. I know Chuck has somebody on to talk about something, so stay tuned for that.
Yes.
And other than that, I'll see you next week, Lexington.